Hey, hey, Soul Tribe, welcome back. This is episode 1.6 of Beyond Deconstructing. I am your host, T. Jamaica Pogue, affectionately known as Deconstructing Neuro. And on today's episode, I had the absolute pleasure of speaking with a filmmaker, a visionary, Mr. Trey Wilson. And as an added bonus, before I jump into my conversation with Trey, I am going to provide you guys with an opportunity to see his award-winning short film, which is entitled Normalcy. And this will also give you guys a little bit more context once we get into the conversation portion, when we start to elaborate on the themes of his film Normalcy. It's just shy of 3 minutes, but in those 3 minutes, it is so powerfully impactful. So without further ado, I'm going to present to you Normalcy, and then we're going to jump right into my conversation with Trey.
I know that I am meant to pave my own way, to make new roads that may take longer than those already traveled. But how long do I have to keep laying new pavement on my own? I am autistic, and like many of us, I've spent my entire life trying to please neurotypicals by masking it. In the past, school and work drained me. I was mentally and physically exhausted from sensory overload and having to live up to everyone's high social standards. It got so bad that I thought death was my only escape. Then, March 2020 came. The pandemic hit and the world finally came to a standstill. Like many, I lost my job and was afraid when suddenly I realized that I was at peace from the anxious life I had before. I was finally calm enough to do what I wanted. I wrote an award-winning screenplay and feature film. I got to make more art for my YouTube channel. I made more friends and found community way easier from the comfort of my own home than in all my years of in-person communication. I was the happiest I had been in a very long time. But a few months into the pandemic, I started to feel guilty for feeling joy while the world was crumbling. I felt terrible for being on unemployment like millions of others when I could easily get another minimum wage job. I felt terrible for not wanting to look like a typical, productive member of society, because this world tells you that if you are not at work, grinding 24/7, you are worthless and don't deserve to breathe air. In the present moment, I am still in a state of limbo. I want a job and the pandemic to come to an end, of course, but I no longer want to return to people in spaces that are committed to misunderstanding me, while expecting me to bend over backwards to understand and accommodate them. A lot of my autistic peers are thriving during the pandemic to some extent because the world finally gave them some peace and accommodations. But now everyone else wants to return to an outdated form of normalcy, where we are left behind and constantly told our needs don't matter. People without disabilities have been given assistance to pave roads for themselves since the beginning of time. When are people finally going to assist the rest of us?
Thank you guys so much for coming back and joining me for another episode of Beyond Deconstructing. Today, I am super, super excited to have our guest, Mr. Trey Wilson. He is a filmmaker, and I'm not going to blather. As always, I'm going to let my guests introduce themselves and let you guys know who he is, what he does, and all that good stuff. So, Trey, take it away.
Hi, I'm Martrice Wilson, or where I go by Trey on TikTok, Trey Wilson. I'm a director, DP, and video colorist in Freeport, Louisiana, North Louisiana area. And in 2021, I made a short film called Normalcy about my experience with autistic burnout pre-pandemic, and how the pandemic and losing my job kind of was a relief at the time for me and kind of gave me a needed break and allowed me to really connect with the broader autistic community and realize and learn more about my autistic traits.
That's awesome. And speaking of your film, that's what drew me to you and where I found you was when I came across Normalcy. And we're going to be touching on that in a little bit. But before we jump into your work and a little bit more about what we've connected on, I would love it if you could share your unique experience with understanding your neurodivergence and understanding that you are autistic.
Yeah, so I kind of had a long journey. So when I was around toddler age, doctors kind of initially had some concerns where they thought that it was possible that I could be autistic because I was struggling with certain sensory issues, like textures with clothing and certain foods. And also I had like kind of just issues, I guess, with like maturing. Like I couldn't tie my shoes at the age that everybody else could. I couldn't use a belt, like things like that. So they preemptively, just as like a caution, put me in, I believe it was like speech therapy, because I was had struggles with like speech and physical therapy to help with my motor skills. And I remember doing like speech therapy specifically all the way till like first grade. Like I remember being like pulled out of class and everything. And after that, everything was pretty, I guess, good. Like I was pretty happy. Obviously, I knew there was, I guess, a difference in me. Like I knew that I wasn't like everybody else somewhat, but it wasn't like bad enough to where like it was really greatly affecting my life. And it wasn't until like middle school where I guess shit hit the fan and things got really difficult. And I really struggled with just connecting with my peers and fitting in. Got really bad social anxiety. I like came home from school every day crying, having panic attacks, and things that I kind of look back in retrospect were probably meltdowns. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of like the first time I started having like suicidal ideations and things like that. So my parents, of course, were really concerned. So they sent me to we went to a therapist or a doctor to see about getting just a full autism diagnosis, because they started to realize that a lot of my traits really were matching up with that. Because besides those social difficulties, I was also had like my really strong hyperfixations and special interests and like obsessive mm-hmm. interests. And they're like, this has to be it. So yeah, we went to a therapist. This is when I was like 12 years old. And they, of course, were like, oh, I don't really see, like, he's functioning well enough. So I don't really see, you know, the point of like an autism diagnosis. So, but they did diagnose me with like social anxiety, ADHD, and like depression. And that's when I first started getting like medicated for those things. And yeah, then I didn't really, so I kind of just for the whole time after that, just thought everything, I attributed everything just to social anxiety. So it wasn't until around late high school, like senior year of high school, when I was actually making a documentary for a senior project about autistic children, where I started questioning it again, because I just could see all the similarities. And so me and my parents started like thinking about it again. And we went to doctors again. Once again, they denied it, like, oh, you're making eye contact. You're talking to me now. So there can't be anything wrong. You get good grades in school, all that stuff. And then it wasn't until the very end of senior year where we were looking through like medical records for like vaccinations or something for, cause I was at that time, I was going to go out of state for college. And I think we were like looking through the medical records and we found that that therapist I went to when I was like 12 years old also had diagnosed me with pervasive developmental disorder, which the very year after he went to that therapist, that was actually put on the DSM-5 as autism spectrum disorder. So it's similar to like the Asperger's thing, where it's not really an official diagnosis anymore. It's all just under the diagnosis of autism. So basically all these years I had autism, but it didn't get put on the criteria until the year after he went to that therapist. So yeah, so that's my wild journey. And yeah, since then, I kind of started getting more connected with the community, but I didn't really deeply get connected to it until I had burnt out from my job in school like a few years later. And then, yeah, when like my film kind of shows, once I was at home, that's when I really started to really delve into the extra autistic community and really learn more about masking and what burnout really was. And that kind of led me to the creation of my film.
Wow. Thank you so much for walking us through that. I always enjoy listening to other people's journeys and understanding their autism, because at the end of the day, we look so different on the surface, but as you can see, we all arrived to the same point. And it beautifully illustrates how much of a spectrum autism is. It doesn't have one look. Yes, there are criteria that we all meet to certain degrees, but there isn't this one face of autism or this one way that it presents. And that is a great segue to start to talk about your film Normalcy. So like I alluded to earlier, that's how I first came across you, was when I saw your short film called Normalcy. And I watched it several times because I was just like in awe at how much I related to it and how it was like, if I was a filmmaker, if I had this kind of creativity, this is probably how I would have expressed everything that I have been thinking and the mission of what I'm trying to accomplish with deconstructing neurodivergence. So, but the part that's really resonating with me was when you talked about after or during the pandemic, being laid off and having time at home is what gave you the space to be able to see that you actually thrive in an environment that's away from this heightened social situation that adds to anxiety. And that resonates with me so much. Also the part about like reaching burnout and things like that. So that's kind of the current journey that I'm on right now. I was in autopilot for my whole life, kind of just like in survival mode, and was always a people pleaser and a fawner, and I didn't take care of myself.
That was me.
Yeah, exactly. So where I'm going with this. And so once I finally started to heal, it's weird. It's like once you start to heal certain things, you feel safe to finally be yourself. And so the more I healed, the more autistic I presented, or the more things that actually bothered me that I would ignore or not say anything about, I no longer could ignore. I no longer could mask that those were an issue. And a lot of that relates to how I used to be able to work. I know right now I am incapable of going back to working in a traditional corporate structure with the social aspect and the masking and everything like that. But this society doesn't look at autism in high masking, because I don't like to say high functioning, and high masking people,
yes,
as an issue. And so that's my long-winded way of kind of like bringing it back to, I love the fact that you called it normalcy, because that's a construct that I'm trying to deconstruct with deconstructing neurodivergence. And I actually wanted to ask you to kind of just expand a little bit more on your vision behind Normalcy.
Yeah, so around, I guess, the very end of like 2019, I was finishing up my associate's degree, and I was also working at AirBread, trying to, just doing what I was supposed to be doing, you know, the adult kind of responsibilities, really trying to keep up and, you know, get to do what I was supposed to do. But a lot of it was just very overwhelming, because it's like, it was almost like years of masking basically was just building up to like this climax where I couldn't handle it anymore. Mm-hmm. And around like right before the pandemic, like I was really at my like breaking point. And then when everything suddenly shut down, it was kind of like, I just had all this time to kind of relax and just calm my body down that I hadn't experienced since I was like a child. Like I hadn't experienced that kind of joy. And there was part of me that felt very, that I kind of talked about in the film, I felt kind of very, guilty about, because it's like everyone else is going through like the worst time. Mm-hmm. And I'm kind of going through like the best time. And even hearing other autistic people said like that time was very difficult for them because they lost their structure and their routine that they really needed to, you know, make it through every day. So, yeah, there was part of me that felt very like hesitant to be open about it. So it was kind of these ideas were kind of whirling around in my head, like after like the first 4 months of the pandemic, like those first four months were like a really great time. But after that, that's when things started to like get a little bit, I guess, challenging for me because it was that part of like, okay, like at some point I have to be back out in the world, but I just couldn't bring myself to do it. Like I was still in that state of burnout where I just couldn't, I knew that I couldn't go back to that level of productivity that our neuronormative culture expects out of people. Mm-hmm. So I kind of just tried everything that I could do to try to do freelance work as a filmmaker. So I started doing like, I did a music video. I met one of my now best friends and DP'd or shot one of his films for him. And then I tried to make my own narrative short film. It was like a horror film, thriller kind of film, but I couldn't get it off the ground. I couldn't get the actors together. And I just kind of felt a little, I guess, defeated because like I'm trying so hard to make this freelance thing work so that I don't have to go back to, you know, a regular kind of day job workforce type thing. But it just, nothing was working out. And then that's kind of when I had this idea to make Normalcy because I figured like, it was just like all these things that I've been wanting to tell in some kind of way. And I kept trying to like come up with like ideas and stories in my head, but I just couldn't figure it out. And I realized like, what if I just kind of do something like a pseudo documentary type thing? Because I saw this video from other filmmakers like Kai Foster. Mm-hmm. And she kind of made a similar kind of video where she was just kind of like in her room, kind of talking about her mental health struggles and things. And I really liked the way she formatted it. And I was like, oh, I could kind of do something similar to tell my story of autistic burnout and also kind of play around with my love of like just cinematography and things like that. And I wouldn't require a crew because we're still heavy in the, you know, the pandemic. I wouldn't need a crew, any cast. So yeah, one day I decided like, just F it, I'll just shoot this thing and put it out and see what happens. And honestly, it was like one of the most like, out of like all the filmmaking things I've done, all the films I've like made or helped others make, like that was the most like freeing and like most creative I felt because it was just me and myself and what I wanted to do. And I didn't have to like answer to anybody. I didn't have to, you know, like mm-hmm. compromise any of like my vision or anything. I could just tell it. And yeah, so I just made it. And then I guess the scary part was releasing it and people seeing it, especially family members and things like that and what they would, you know, say, but I just knew I had to put it out there. So mm-hmm. yeah, and then I just released it around April 2021, and then it kind of took off on Twitter and actually autistic community on Twitter, and then it took off on YouTube for that year. And then I submitted it to AutFest. It's the Autism Film Festival in Texas, and in November 2021 it won Best Short in Dallas. So yeah, and that was kind of like the journey. It just kind of kept taking off and more people were like interested. And I've met so many like great people in the autistic community now. And it helped me realize just kind of what I want to do as an artist is to kind of keep telling these stories about autism and like the name of your podcast, Deconstructing Neurodivergence Through Art. And mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's pretty much it.
That is amazing. And I'm just like over here, see, I'm nodding. I'm like, yeah, because I feel you on so much of it. Like, I can't thank you enough for creating that film because, again, like, I'm not a filmmaker. I am someone who, you know, I think that I'm pretty okay with my words. Like, if I have a chance to sit down and formulate a thought, I'm pretty good with my words, but I've never been someone to use my creativity in that kind of way in such a visual medium like that to get across the message that is very well needed. And like you kind of touched on, what I'm doing with Deconstructing Neurodivergence is presenting these other multifaceted ways that autism present in different people, and especially us as people of color, as Black people, like we get dismissed a lot of the time, and we get dismissed a lot of the time, like our problems aren't really problems. We get gaslit a lot. And then if we're open about our struggles and vulnerabilities, that often is weaponized against us, or it's spun on its head. It's like, oh, they're only saying this because they're trying to get something. They're trying to be manipulative. We're not given the same benefit of the doubt of like, hey, this is who we are and this is what we struggle with, but this is also what we can bring to the table. Listen to us. Don't ignore us. Don't sweep us under the rug. Don't try to box us into a corner and make us conform to a society that was built for and by people who think and operate completely differently than we do. And that for me is such an important part of the mission of doing work like what you did with Normalcy or with Deconstructing Neurodivergence, because the conversations always leave us out and they're very one-dimensional and it doesn't show what it's really like for us. And it's important that people understand it from our perspective if we have any kind of hope to make some changes.
Yeah. Because that's like one of the things that I didn't even really like get into the detail on. It's like, pre-pandemic, like I actually did at a job, like be open about like my autism, and like, I still like, it didn't change anything. Like I didn't get any of the accommodation. If anything, I honestly feel like I got treated worse because I was open about it. So it was just, so it was like that experience, which was a very like traumatic experience for me, is like what made it very hard for me to want to keep like working. Because even the job I did after that, it was a better environment, but like I didn't disclose anything with anyone just because of that previous experience. So I just, but I still kind of, that trauma of it lingers with me to where that's kind of why, like for the past 3 years, I just really was like, I just couldn't go back into the public workforce because I was just afraid of that happening. And even though that last job that I was at, that burned me out, even though it was a better environment than the previous job, it still was just the constant workload of that in the last few months of school. And it just, it just kind of all built up in a way that I didn't realize was happening till it was almost too late. So, So I just wanted to say.
And it's unfortunate that we're forced to mask because, like you just said, you disclose to your previous employer that you are autistic and what you struggle with the intention of letting them know so that you can get some reasonable accommodations and let them know like what you struggle with or your strengths are. And it wound up getting you worse treatment. And I feel the exact same way. I have been with my employer for coming up on 6 years now. And I was always a top performer. Like I had, like I'm about to come up with 6 years and I'm on my fifth position. Like that's how I work, you know? And so I've never asked for anything. I've always been someone who's been a contributor. But after realizing that I'm autistic and starting to heal, I realized that I am overwhelmed and overstimulated and so anxiety ridden being in the office. And the days that I work from home, I have so much energy. I love what I do. I'm peppy. I'm more available. I'm more able to focus because I am outside of the environment that was causing me so much stress. So I thought, you know, oh, wow, I've been here for so long. I've built a good reputation here. I'm such a key contributor. I'm told how valuable I am. I should just be able to talk to my boss and I should just be able to talk to HR and tell them what I'm struggling with and see what I can do to get some accommodations. Like, hey, I already work from home 2 days out of the week. Can I just work from home every day of the week? Because this is going to actually help me with my mental health. And it was so disheartening to be told, yeah, sure, we'll help you out. And then as soon as I asked for it, I got the exact opposite response. No, you can't do this. You have to be in the office. And unless you have an ADA form, we're not providing you any kind of accommodations. And I am self-diagnosed autistic. But like, yeah, I was just like, wow, okay. I didn't realize that it was going to be like a 180 like this. I thought you guys cared about me. I thought you guys cared about my mental health. I thought you cared about me taking care of myself. I thought you cared about me thriving, but you don't. You're like any other company and you just want to
box me into a like neurotypical role. And I'm like, just because I was able to do it before doesn't mean I'm able to do it now, because I'm not the same person. I'm not in autopilot. I'm not this people pleaser who doesn't realize that I have needs that I haven't expressed for so long, and that this environment just isn't conducive to how I work.
Yeah, exactly. Because I think that was kind of like the big thing. I think why I showed so much is because then I didn't really know how to advocate for myself. I didn't have the language really yet at that time, because I really hadn't connected deeply to the rest of the autistic community yet. So I didn't even really know what accommodations to really even ask for at the time. Mm-hmm. Like, I just knew that, like, okay, like, I'm going to be a little bit like slower to get new tasks, and there's just certain like areas that I feel like I'll be better suited in. But especially in like the fast food or like retail world, because at that specific job where I experienced like the most traumatic things, it was retail. And, you know, they do not care. Like, it's just, you've got to do every role. You can't just stay in this role that you're really good at. You have to, you know, be very social with customers. And I actually could be very good at it. And that was kind of what the conflicting thing was, is one minute they tell you, oh, you're like the best employee, you're super valuable. And the moment you slip up, it's a completely different thing. Mm-hmm. And that's the reason why, like now, because now currently I'm going to be starting back in like another retail job soon, simply just because I don't have much of a choice at this point, as far as like the freelance work not really working out as well as I wanted it to at this moment. But now, though, that I have learned more about myself, I do think the experience won't be as bad as it was like pre-pandemic years, because I do have the language to like advocate for myself and know what I need in order to like survive mm-hmm. in a certain like environment for a certain amount of time. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Man, I hate that a lot of us, it seems like it's a theme in the community when we reach this burnout and we realize that being in these toxic work cultures, because let's face it, corporate culture, typical American work culture, is very toxic. It's predicated on you not having boundaries. Like, the less boundaries you have, the better you're going to do. And as soon as you enforce a boundary, yeah, it's like, well, who grew a spine, you know? But it's unfortunate that we're kind of forced into situations where we have to basically like hurt ourselves in order to survive, because even though you understand more about yourself and you know how to accommodate yourself and you know how to advocate for yourself, you still have to willingly put yourself in a situation that you know is going to make you uncomfortable, that you know is not conducive to you being able to thrive. You just have to go back into survival mode. And I hate that for us. I hate that so many of us are not given the accommodations and the respect that we need to be able to thrive, as opposed to forcing ourselves to have to try to survive in a system that just isn't set up for us. And the crazy thing is, most of the time, the accommodations that we ask for would benefit not just us, but like other people as well. And I think that that's part of the reason why a lot of the times people get, these corporations and companies get upset when someone has the audacity to ask for something, because then you can set the trend and now other people realize, oh, maybe I shouldn't be working, you know, 10-hour days and not taking my vacation time and or taking everybody's shift and, you know, not saying, no, maybe I should ask to have a break if I'm working, you know, this amount of time, or ask to be able to do this, that, and the other. And I think that they don't like that because they feel like it's disrupting the status quo. They need to keep it a certain way. But again, like, that doesn't work for most people. I think that a lot of neurotypical people who, quote unquote, thrive in that society, this is my theory, is that they're just less sensitive to input than we are. We just have a higher sensitivity to input, to where we can't ignore it as easily as they do. Even when we do before, like for me, when I was masking and didn't know it, my body told me that I was overloaded in different ways. I may not have been able to consciously understand why I was so tired or why I was so irritated at the end of the day, because during the day, it seemed like I was okay. But once I connected those dots, I'm like, yeah, no, my body did tell me that I didn't like this environment. This wasn't for me. I'm not cool with it. So yeah, it's just, this is my long way. I'm always ranting about it, but like the more I learn about myself and the more I understand about our culture that we live in, the more I realize how much it's literally designed to keep anybody that diverges from this one particular set of ideals of what's right or what's perfect. If you diverge from it in any way, you're wrong. And if you can't ignore or change or conform in a way that's acceptable to the few at the top, then your life is just going to be made more difficult. And the more you diverge from it, the more intersections you sit at, the more bullshit you're going to have piled on top.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause it's like, for me, cause even like, you even like receive some of the pushback, like at least outside of the online spaces, like you can even like receive all the pushback from other neurodivergent people. Like they're like, well, I can do it, so why can't you? You know what I mean? And it's like, well, we're not all the same. We don't all have the same, I guess, needs as far as like what we need in our workplace environment. But yeah, like I'm very much at a point now where because so much of my life, I've been told that my gut reaction to things is wrong, or it's just my anxiety talking, or it's just that. And I'll admit, there is times where obviously that was the case where I was being, you know, just letting my thoughts run wild. But majority of the time, my gut was right, and I didn't go with my gut. And I feel like I'm at a place now where I'm really starting to try to figure out like the difference between the two. Like, okay, what's anxiety and what's, you know, my natural kind of like instinct or pattern recognition telling me that something is wrong. And yeah, now I'm at a place where it's like, okay, like if I see these things, like I'm not going to stay there. Like if I have to job hop over and over again, like it's just what I'm going to have to do, but at least I'm surviving, you know, and not burning myself out by just staying in a place because outside forces or whatever telling me that, you know, I just have to accept it. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, so it's certainly not going to be easy, but at the same time, like I just can't do what I did pre-pandemic anymore. I can't be that person, that above and beyond people pleaser person. Like I have to, you know, save my energy and not burn out again, because I can't severely burn out like this again, where like I'm out for like 3 years. I know I probably will burn out to an extent. It's inevitable. But if it gets to that level again, like I don't know if I can make it out the other side again. So I really have to like care about my needs and really like listen to my gut more often. So yeah.
Yeah. And you touched on a good point, and I know you mentioned this in your film as well about like suicidal ideations. That's a lot. That's also a theme amongst a lot of autistic people. I know myself as well. I went through a period in my mid-20s where I was severely depressed and suicidal because I just didn't fit in. I didn't realize I felt like I just wasn't accomplished enough. I was supposed to do all these shoulds, that external voice, that societal voice, those pressures of what should I be doing? My life is supposed to look like this. But even once we reach this point of understanding ourselves and starting to accommodate ourselves, a lot of us still face a lot of depression and ostracization when we start to stand up for ourselves and create those boundaries, to the point that a lot of us don't fully recover from burnout and aren't able to provide for ourselves, aren't able to make a living, feel like we become a strain on other people, and still, even after learning about ourselves, never really fully move away from those ideations, because it's like, well, what's the point of fighting and continuing to fight against a system that is dedicated to misunderstanding me, that intrinsically doesn't understand me at all, that views me through their lens, who thinks that everything that I'm doing is an act, or everything that I'm doing is a manipulation to get what I want. It's like, what's the point of keep fighting? Sometimes those thoughts run through even my head, and I've gotten to a point where I'm like, I'm really comfortable with who I am. I fully accept that I'm autistic. I have no shame around being autistic at all. No longer feel like I have to use workaround language and say neuro spicy or, you know, a little different. Like I am autistic, you know, but even someone who has reached this point, sometimes when I realize the uphill climb that we still have left, and when I'm still fighting this battle with work where they just don't believe me and they don't care and they're not going to accommodate me, it's like, why am I fighting still sometimes? And that's hard.
Yeah. And I'm kind of like at that place too, where it's like, like recently, like my friendship like bubble has gotten smaller, like because I mostly only just have online friendships at this moment, because everybody like pre-pandemic, like I can't connect with them anymore, because they're either like, you know, they were either were neurodivergent, but they were very highly masking, or they were like neurotypical, and I couldn't, you know, keep up the image that they had in my head of me before, where I was masking. Like, I'm just not that same person anymore. And I'm kind of also at a place where I'm just, especially not just being autistic, but being Black, being queer, like where you just get sick and tired of having to explain yourself to people over and over again, and your existence and your humanity to people constantly. Like, I'm just at a place where I'm over it now. And that's the reason why, like, I'm just like keeping so much of like my, I guess, social bubble and things like that just so small now. And I'm very like particular about who I connect with, because I'm so sick or tired of explaining myself to people, and, you know, having to like, and I know to a certain extent you do have to tell people about yourself in order for them to obviously learn about you. But if I can just tell when a person's like approaching me or asking me questions in good faith or not. And a lot of times they aren't. A lot of time they just want you to confirm the beliefs that they already have in their head, and they don't want to change that. They're still trying to want to force you to conform in some way. And I can't do it anymore.
Yes. Oh my God. You just hit on something that I talk about all the time when it comes to that, like, confirmation bias, right? And that lens. So like, have you heard of like top down versus bottom up thinking?
I think so. Okay. Run it again?
No worries.
I feel like I've heard the term, just not the full explanation.
Yeah, no worries. I'm sure once you hear it, it'll jog your memory, because sometimes I think it has like other like phrases for it. But so we as autistic people, for the most part, have bottom up thinking, where we want to amass information and evidence to come to a conclusion. So that's a very objective way of looking at things, because it's like, I will take in all of this information and then come to a conclusion. Holistic, especially neurotypical people, have top-down thinking. They have their assumption, or they made their conclusion. So now everything else that they see afterwards is filtered through the lens of what they already believe, and they look for confirmation. So, for example, if somebody thinks that you are a manipulative person, and that, you know, if you're, so like, I'll give examples from my own life. I can be very emotional sometimes, like when something really affects me, and I'll cry, right? But in neurotypical culture, crying, especially from a woman, is usually seen as like a form of manipulation. It's like, oh, those are crocodile tears. You're crying because you want to seem small. You don't want people to pick on you, or you want someone to show you sympathy. So if I'm telling someone about something and I'm getting passionate about it, or it like feels very, you know, I feel very strong about it, and I feel safe, for the longest time, I would just cry unprovoked, and I'm like, nothing I can do to stop it. Like, it wasn't me trying to be manipulative, but I found out that a lot of people like saw me that way. They thought I was being like a BSer. And so even when I would come to them and tell them stuff about like what I was struggling with now, I learned after the fact that they didn't care, because they thought I was only telling them these things and crying to get their sympathy. Not that I was just factually telling them what's going on with me so that they could understand the change in my behavior. And so they continued to treat me like I was being manipulative and just trying to get my own way, as opposed to seeing how much I was struggling and reaching out to them for help. It's really tough.
Because, that's like the biggest thing that was like thrown at me like pre-pandemic. It's like, oh, you just want pity. You just want people to pity you. You don't, you know, and that was kind of one of the big, and also like, because I tend to like go like very nonverbal a lot, and that was often read as me having an attitude, or, you know, like that. And I know it's like, especially like you probably as a Black woman, it's even more like those things are thrown at you. So yeah, like that's something I very much experience a lot. And it's like a lot of times it's like, I'm not intentionally trying to like be rude to you. Like, it's just, I can't. Like, I'm just so overloaded. I can't speak anymore. And I remember like at the job that like I had the most struggles with, like I almost even got fired once because I literally could not talk to the customers because I was just so burnt out. And of course, that day, the manager, the district manager, wanted to come in. And I couldn't really speak to him very well. And he was like, oh, you need to get him out here. You need to fire him, like, immediately.
Wow.
And the manager, of course, who didn't really like me much either, was like, oh, he's just weird or off. Like, just give him another, like, chance. And she let me stay, you know, mm-hmm. and they let me stay. But yeah, like, those are just, like, experiences that I remember from, like, that time where it's, like, yeah, people really just, what you're saying, like, they have that assumption of what's going on, and they don't think that there could be anything else that's happening. So, yeah.
Yeah, so, yeah, that top down, I'm so sorry that happened to you. That freaking sucks. Mm-hmm. But that freaking top down thinking is what we are facing. And then, like, me being a very literal thinker and I guess kind of naive, because it took me kind of I learned the hard way how very manipulative neurotypical words are. Like, they don't say, they'll sometimes say the opposite of what they mean, and you're just supposed to somehow magically realize that they're not saying that. So yeah. A lot of times, me being literal, I didn't even realize sometimes that certain things were being said, or that when I said something, it was being interpreted a certain way. And then I would just get this reputation of being arrogant and being, you know, mean. And I'm like, how am I arrogant and mean when I don't talk hardly? I'm sitting here quiet with my earphones in. And whenever anybody comes up to me, I'll take them out, I'll smile, I'll help you, and then put them right back in. I don't talk bad about anybody. I've never said a mean word about anybody. How is it that I now have this reputation of being rude and arrogant? Oh, I know why, because I'm a Black woman who has the audacity to be quiet around a bunch of, like, white people in an office.
Yeah. And it's like, for me, it's like, I usually, like, when people in the past, like, I remember one time, it's actually kind of funny, like, in the past, like, people were like, when I get in high school, for instance, like, when I was, like, very quiet, I wouldn't really speak or say anything. And I remember, like, people were like, oh, he must be quiet because he's, like, in the closet or something. And which is funny, because I actually was, like, gay. But it's, like, that's not the reason why I'm quiet. Like, it's just, I don't speak unless I feel a reason to speak. Like, I don't. And then that, too, I feel like a lot of people, when they speak to you, they think that, like, they're owed, like, a conversation, like, their old friendship, just because they spoke to you, or just because they invited you to sit at a table. And it's like, it's not necessarily anything that y'all did wrong. It's just, I don't connect with you. I don't feel compatible with you. And that's okay. We don't have to be friends just because you know, you were being nice to me. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's kind of where that label of being standoffish or being, you know, arrogant or stuck up or whatever, kind of came from a lot of people, because I didn't give them the reaction or the thing that they expected. Like, it's kind of like, even like, because now that it's the holiday season, like, sometimes I hate, like, being given gifts because I expect a certain reaction, and it's like, you know, and I have to, like, amp it up, and it's like, sometimes, like, okay, like, what do you want me to do? Like, do you want me to just, like, turn cartwheels? Like, I just, like, I'm happy, I'm excited, I'm not that kind of person where I, like, throw it in, like, a certain way, depending on what it is, you know?
So. Yeah, no, I think a lot of that has to do with, like I think I said it earlier, like, neurotypicals, a lot of things are performative. It's like, they assume everything is supposed to go a certain way. So if I come and talk to you, you're supposed to want to talk to me. If I give you a gift, you're supposed to say this, that, and the other. But it's like, that leaves no room for authentic expression, because if I don't want to talk to you, why should I have to, just because that's what you deem as socially acceptable? They call us arrogant, and I feel like that's a projection, because it's like, just because a lot of, like, especially when you're autistic, our inner world is our favorite place. It's a rich inner tapestry. We get lost in our own minds, but that is seen through their lens as, oh, they're so self-centered, they're just only thinking about themselves. But if you really think about it, they are super arrogant, because they make everything about them. Oh, you're not talking to me, you must not like me. Or, oh, I came and talked to you, so you owe me a conversation. And it's like, if you thought about it for a second, you guys are actually the ones that are self-centered, because you expect all of these things from other people. And a lot of the times they don't even give it back, especially when they realize that you aren't, you know, they may not clock you exactly as autistic, but a lot of times neurotypicals tell that you're a little bit different. And if they clock you as somebody that's a little bit different, they're going to rank you as below them and try to figure out a way to manipulate you. And when you don't give that back or you don't feed into it, it's like, who is this person? Why can't we, you know?
Yeah. And that's the reason why, like, I can't really even like necessarily mask anymore, because it's like, even when you do mask, like, they always can tell, like, even if they, like you said, they don't have the word for it, they, it's just always like within like the first 5 minutes of an interaction with you, they know you're different somehow, and they start treating you that way. And it's like, I can't, there's no way for me to like prevent that anymore. Like, I don't know how else to, you know, get around that. So it's just kind of like, I just, you can't really mask fully, you know?
Exactly. Like, you can't mask on purpose, I would say, because I don't feel like anybody. I don't feel like anybody masks on purpose. Like, I never knew that I was masking until I knew what masking was. And then once I knew what it was and why I did it, I could no longer do it because I wasn't the unhealed version of myself that did it as a trauma response. I was in trauma drive mode. That's the only way that I was able to keep going. But as I started to heal that and have boundaries, I'm like, no, there's no way I can ignore the fact that, you know, I've forced myself to be a part of conversations just because it's the socially acceptable thing to do, when being a part of that conversation is more draining than me doing an 8-hour day worth of work at home by myself. Like, me having this one conversation before noon just drained me more than I got drained doing, you know, so much work. And it's like, and then when you try to explain that to somebody who just doesn't get it, they take it like you're just complaining for no reason. It's like everybody's able to do
this. Personal attack. It's like, it's not you. It's just how my brain is. I just get drained by these things. And I'm not like personal. It's just I need my space sometimes.
So, exactly. Yeah. People are offended by your actions so much, thinking that you're doing it because of them. And it's like, you don't realize, again, you are doing everything that you do because of other people, whether you realize it or not. I feel like this about like neurotypical people, because you do, you have this job, or you drive this car, or you dress a certain way because you want the acceptance of people around you. You're assuming the same from us because you have top-down thinking. What you need to understand is that we're not playing the same game, and you can't judge me by the same rules, because otherwise this is where we are.
Exactly.
It's insane. So as a filmmaker, you have a I feel like you have a unique eye and a unique perspective when it comes to seeing other forms of art. And a lot of the times, if we see autistic people represented in media, it's represented in a very one-dimensional way. It's usually presented from an allistic lens, an outsider lens. So I actually kind of wanted to get your opinion or your perspective on media and autism representation.
So I feel like in general, a lot of the media that's come out in the recent years, it's like there's some things that are starting to get better. Like the most recent like project that I've seen that I really felt like did a good job was this show that was on for 2 seasons. It was on Freeform, I think, in Hulu. It was called Everything's Gonna Be Okay. It was like a comedy series. And that was actually written by and like starring an actually autistic person. So, and I feel like that's the reason why it was so good. But I feel like a lot of the other things from like not autistic creators, I feel like so many of the stories, like they heavily focus on the non-autistic perspective and like the burdens of as a parent, and like how much of like a burden and like a strain that the autistic like person can be on the neurotypical people. And I do think like the neurotypical like struggles and like the caretakers and stuff, like their struggles are valid. They, you know, have every right to tell their stories. I don't want to like downplay that. I know it's difficult, but I feel like at the same time, if that's the only narrative we see in Hollywood and in film, I just sometimes wonder how, especially younger autistic people, like when that's all they see is the stories where they're constantly being told that they're this burden or this strain on society, how that affects your psyche
And I would really kind of like to add more to that and change that perspective, where especially also because so much of it is told from a white lens, especially a white male lens. Mm-hmm. And like as a Black gay man, like I really want to explore that side of it too in my own work, the different intersectionalities and how that affects things, and also just the stories of people who may have found their diagnosis later in life, because so much of it is from like the people who knew from the very beginning. So I kind of want to add to that narrative. So like I have a concept that I'm kind of working on for a film. Don't know if it's gonna get made like anytime soon, but it's about two autistic boys who kind of fall in love. One is kind of struggling with college and work and essentially burnout, but they don't know that they're autistic yet. But through meeting this other autistic person at a party, they kind of start to connect, and the main character starts to learn that they're autistic themselves. And yeah, I kind of wanted to be like, visually, I kind of wanted to be like something like films like Moonlight or like In the Mood for Love, but like with the mixture of like the tone, like writing wise, like something like recent, like Heartstopper, or like a little bit of like Issa Rae, Insecure, like something kind of like okay. that. So like that's something I really hope to make one day. So yeah.
Oh man, yes, we need that made. Netflix, do you hear that? You know, Hulu, somebody. No, oh my God, I would love that, because yeah, no, you hit the nail on the head. Like, yeah, most of the time, because our representation comes from an holistic lens, and they heavily define autism based on its deficits. Like, autism is defined as a deficits-based disorder. Like, how do we behave, or how we think, how it's a deficit to neurotypical people. And what that does is it continues, like you said, with children who watch it, they feel like, oh, wow, this is all I am. All I am is a burden. It doesn't showcase all of the great things that we can do. Like, our systems-based thinking makes us very efficient and able to find inefficiencies in a lot of things, make things work better. But because we're seen as someone who takes away from things, when we present these, like, oh, why do we do this? Why can't we do it this way? It's seen as like, well, no, you're crazy. We can't do it that way because we do it this way. It's like, no, you're not understanding. I see it from a different perspective. It's not that I just don't get it, or we just don't get it. We need to see that all it is a different way of thinking, a different perspective. So it's so needed to have different perspectives, not just in like how we talk about it, but like you said, in the media, because yeah. that's a lot of people's first look or view into another world. Like, if you don't have any personal experience with someone who is autistic, all you know about autism is what you see in the media. And so yeah. if all you're seeing is this one-dimensional way of the way it's presented, firstly, if you're someone like me, that was part of the reason why it took me so long to figure out that I'm autistic, is because I knew intrinsically, as someone who studied psychology and understood the DSM-5, and then just knowing myself, I'm like, oh, I feel like I'm autistic, but then I would gaslight myself because I'm like, I don't fit this. I'm not Arnie Grape. Yeah. I'm not
Sheldon Cooper, or exactly. you know, all those things, or exactly. the good doctor.
I'm not a white guy, you know what I
yeah,
mean?
Yeah.
You know, so all those things would gaslight me. So if there was more well-rounded and representation in media, if we had movies where there were more than one autistic person and they both presented completely differently and had different kinds of lives, and also if we had media where the person being autistic, their autism wasn't the center of it, if them being autistic was just like a yeah. character trait, you know, as opposed to being like their autism is what's driving this, like that's the difference I feel like between having an actually autistic person come up with the ideas as opposed to an holistic person, because we see ourselves as whole people, and autism, although it's a big part of who we are, it's not all of who we are. And so yeah. I'm sure like you would have thing.
Yeah, yeah. And that's like the big thing I want to show with this, because it's a romance film, and it's like at the end of the day, it's like the any other like cute kind of quirky rom-com thing that you would see that the neurotypicals and straight people always get. Like, it's still very much going to be like, even though we don't shy away from the more traumatic elements of the autistic experience, because you just can't completely ignore that because it kind of informs things. There is still a lot of like the joyous parts of it. And I really want to show how great it is when you finally find your tribe and your community. Like that's kind of the main theme of the story, is like finding your tribe. And yeah, I just want to show us like just in love and like being happy and being full three-dimensional beings. Also being, you know, like sexy, like sex people. Because I feel like so much of our media, we're often like desexualized or, you know, like we're, and I know that there's obviously like ace and asexual, like a lot of ace and asexual, like autistic people, but I feel like that's like, once again, like the only thing that we see. Whereas like in my experience, like being in the online communities that I've been in, like we're very like, we can be flirtatious, we can be funny, we can be, you know, great people to be around. And I kind of wanted to show that, you know, through this film and through my art.
Yes. Oh my goodness. Well, like I said, it's much needed and I'm excited for it. And what I've seen so far of your art is beautiful. And again, we have a very, as autistic people, we have our own unique perspective. So I know you would be able to put your own spin on it and make it something that is that truly paints that picture. That is like, look, we are people. Autism is a part of who we are, but it's not all of who we are. And it doesn't, it shouldn't be the first thing you see when you see us. You should just see us as people, take us as individuals, bottom up, right? They'll see, okay, yeah. Autistic person, that means X, Y, Z, da, da, da. No, person, let me learn about them. Build this picture of them from what I've actually been able to observe and take them as a full person and not just this caricature or this role that they're supposed to play amongst the people.
Exactly. Yeah, and I just I really want to just open up that perspective. I guess that's kind of the way that I want to like deconstruct neurodivergence, is through that lens. And then also like just outside of that, like in any other film, like I do just want to have like just an autistic character, like you said, just exists, where it's like it's not the main focal point, but they're just there. And you know, like they're in a spy movie, they're in a, you know, a big like action adventure thing, they're in some like a mystery film, you know, like I just kind of want to explore that. And just, and with all like autistic Black characters, queer characters, like I just want to expand that. So yeah,
absolutely. And yes, especially with the intersectionality, because yeah, even when we do get a little bit of representation, it's usually, like we said, a white guy or the former Aspie girl, where it's like the quirky girl who's really smart, who's this and the other, but she's usually, again, a white girl. And we rarely venture into the heavy intersectionality of being a person of color, being queer, having another disability, like, you know, all those things layered on that really colors and flavors our experiences and shows us as these wonderful different people. So actually I wanted to ask you about coded characters. So a lot of the times, or what I'm seeing now lately, is us going, a lot of the autistic community going back and deconstructing popular media and seeing how there are some well-established characters that were never overtly autistic, but we can see that they were coded as autistic. Some examples being like Daria. Recently, people were talking about Wednesday from the show Wednesday, as well as Legally Blonde, Elle Woods from Legally Blonde. There's different takes that kind of break down and show that. How do you feel about that? About characters being coded, or do you think that maybe people were kind of reaching for representation? I kind of wanted to get your take on that.
Yeah, I mean, I do feel like there are some instances where people may kind of be reaching a little bit, but at the same time, though, I feel like, especially when I see like the reactions of neurotypical people and their like immediate disapproval of it, it's like, okay, but like, how is it hurting you? Like, like, you know what I mean? Like, just we don't have that, the same, you know, out and open representation, to just let us, like, you know, have it, let people just have it, that idea in their head. And another thing that I've also noticed is that I feel like Hollywood is better at writing coded autistic characters than they are actually when it's stated. Like, I feel like a lot of, like, the autistic characters that I've resonated with have been coded characters. Like, recently there's been a Gregory on Abbott Elementary. A lot of people have been saying he's autistic coded, And it's like, that's really like to be only like Black, like autistic representation that I can really think of. But it, once again, it's a coded character. It's not stated. And like, that's kind of the thing that I want to like change is like, okay, let's actually like start stating it. And let's start, you know, like, you can still keep the character the same, just stating, like, you don't have to change anything. And I feel like that's kind of the thing that like, where I assume these non-autistic writers get afraid is like, oh, once you put the label on it, there's going to be all this expectation or pressure. But it's like, well, people have already loved and been with the character, so just keep it the same. Like, you don't have to really change anything. Like, this is what we like.
Yeah, so, exactly. Yeah. But that's due to that top-down thinking, you know, because as soon as you slap this label on it, now it's like the cognitive dissonance is like, no, I still need to keep them in the box that I had them in. Like, if this person is here, they can't be here. They don't I feel like it's hard for neurotypical people to take in new information and apply it and then change their perspective. It's like, this is what I think, this is what I believe. And if it doesn't fall in line with it, I'm going to dismiss it or filter it and view it in a way that it will just confirm what I believe already. And so I think that contributes to the fear of them just saying, yeah, this character is autistic. Or I think the people who have such visceral reactions to it are afraid because they resonate with this character, that if you say this character is autistic, like, oh, does that mean that I'm autistic now? What if it does?
Yeah.
Is that such a bad thing? It's only a bad thing because of how we see it. It's not inherently bad to be autistic. It's only bad to be autistic in a society that is like just hell bent on not understanding us or accepting us in any way.
Yeah. And that too, like a lot of these characters that you do see, like I think about like the Gregories and stuff like that, like they're thriving, like they're doing well. Like they're not, you know, so it's like, I don't like, but they still have that idea, that stigma that it's a negative thing. And it's like, you can see that we can live great and successful lives if we're in places that embrace us for who we are. Cause I feel like that's one of the great things about that show is like, they never really like shame him for anything or any of the characters for like their inherent traits. Like they just, you know, and they just embrace each other for who they are. And I feel like that's kind of the lesson that I wish people would take away from the whole experience and us talking about it. But of course, you know, people still have their ideas in their head where they can't, you know, accept that. But also there's a part of me that, like, when I do think about these coded characters, there's a part of me, because I know a lot of these shows are written by people who aren't autistic, where it's like, you know what, just keep them coded, because I don't know if you guys would be able to handle it well if it is stated, you know what I mean? Like, that's, I don't know. So there's also that part of me too, where it's like, okay, it's part of me that actually doesn't want them to say it, because it may end up making the representation worse in a way, because now they're overthinking everything. So I don't know. It's a tough thing.
No, you're exactly right. That's a good point. Yeah, because it's like, now you're going to try too hard. You know, you're going to lean on every stereotype that, you know, it's just like before the LGBTQIA+ community started to get a little bit more representation, it was like always the stereotype. You got the very overly flamboyant guy who's doing all this, or you have the really butch girl who like wants, it's like, yes, although we have very femme guys, gay men, we have very masculine gay women. Those are just one small little piece of the varied spectrum of the LGBTQIA+ spectrum. So I feel like that's a good analogy. It's like, now with our representation on the neurodivergent side, again, we need it to be multifaceted. We don't just fit in one box. It's not a bunch of stereotypes. So if you are going to move from having coded characters to having them be overtly autistic, like you said, you don't have to change anything about them other than the fact that this is a label for me. I'm still the same person that you like. You liked all my quirks. You liked everything about me that you labeled as quirky or weird or different or manic pixie dream girl or whatever. Yeah. All of those things were cool. But as soon as I said autistic, now I'm like a freak, or now I have to be like someone who like went from stimming like this to stimming like this. Like, you know, you don't have to change all of those.
You have to change all of that. Yeah. And I feel like that's the reason why like we really do need to like push for just more representation, because I feel like that's another thing too, is like everybody looks towards this one character even other autistic people would look to this one character and they'll like critique it and be like, well, that's not me. That's not how it is. And it's like, well, not everybody's experience is the same. And that's right. why we need more stuff so that, you know, we have less of that kind of debate. Like everybody can find their own character that they resonate with. So yes. yeah, that's kind of like the big important thing for me. That's why like in my film, like I have two autistic characters because there was a part of me like, okay, maybe one could be neurotypical and one being autistic. But I decided to make it both ways because that shows the differences that people can be different. Like one is more of an extrovert type of autistic, very talkative, very outgoing, and can sometimes like struggle with like, you know, understanding people's boundaries and stuff mm-hmm. like that. While one is kind of more kind of like me, very reserved, very introverted, very in their own like space. And I kind of just, I feel like that was kind of a way to like show the differences. Then they also have their other autistic friends that they meet up with in the story along the way. And they also, once again, showing like it from other perspectives too, like a Black woman, other people of other races, people who may have other comorbid disabilities as well. Like just showing mm-hmm. all these different facets of it, because I feel like so much of media just shows it in this one kind of way. So yeah.
Absolutely. Well, like I said before, I'm looking forward to seeing what you have in the future, because so far, with if normalcy is a preview into what we have to expect from you, I know that you're going to continue to bring a very authentic view and voice to our stories, and it's much needed for the general public to see and understand, and for also for the autistic community to have that validation and the representation. And before we go, I want to give you an opportunity to say any, you know, last words or any kind of like I don't know, not a mission statement, but you know, like basically like your message to people who are, you know, whether they know they're neurodivergent, whether they suspect they're neurodivergent, or they're just interested in learning more about autism from actually autistic people. Leave us with just a few words, and then also make sure you remind everybody where they can find you on social media and find your work.
Yeah, so I guess the thing that I would, I guess, tell people that are looking or questioning, I guess, is just really try to make sure that you're looking at resources from actually like autistic people, like because I know that like a lot of people probably are questioning, they probably have some form of like social media, and you can always like find those hashtags and find those community members, because I feel like if you just go like to Google or something and just search like autism, like most of the resources are going to be from Autism Speaks or like, you know, those types of organizations where they're not always the best resource. So I would definitely try to get like connected more with like the actually autistic community. And I guess in terms of like finding a like getting like a diagnosis, like I can't, it's kind of hard to like speak on, because I feel like if you really feel like you need it, then like you should like go for it and like get the resources that you need to help, but just make sure that you really do like your research on how your autism like presents itself, so that doctors can kind of like, I guess, hopefully believe you. But at the same time, I guess expect that it's going to be like a big uphill battle, I guess, is kind of thing I tell people, because I had like a friend recently who was questioning if they're autistic, and it's kind of what I had to like tell them. Like I gave them the resource, there's this website called autastic.com, and there's like a lot of like late diagnosed people on there. And I was like, okay, like you should join this site just to like talk to people and kind of get a sense of like the process from other people and just have that sense of community as you're going through this, because that's really what, because it can be a very tough process, and it's always great to like have a community of people to reach out to and talk to. So I guess that's kind of like the big thing, is just finding community is, I guess, my biggest recommendation. Like, I'm also part of a Black Autistic Discord server. Been there for like about a year. So, and it's like a great like place where like I really feel like I can just be myself and completely unmasked. So I feel like that's kind of like, I guess, the big advice that I would give to people who are on this journey, is just really try to connect with other like artistic like groups and communities online, and utilize those spaces, because a lot of them often, even if you're diagnosed or self-diagnosed, like they accept either way. Mm-hmm. So yeah, definitely utilize those resources, because you can really learn a lot about yourself. And if you're trying to get a diagnosis, you can learn a lot about that process as well. So yeah. And I guess as far as you said finding me, right? Like my social.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm on Twitter at Martrice14. I usually also tweet about a lot of different stuff. I do tend to do more like filmmaking stuff on there too, talk more about film stuff. Then I have my YouTube channel, which is just Trey Wilson. Then I'm trying to remember my TikTok. I'm still new to TikTok, so I'm trying to remember what my thing is. Let me look it up.
No worries. Since we're mutuals, I'll make sure I put your TikTok information on your social media.
Like a link tree or something to you.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I do have your link tree. So I will make sure that all of the links are in the description for the episode as well. But I am so thankful that you were able to spend some time with me today. I am looking forward to speaking with you again in the future. Again, we're following each other now, so I'm looking out for your new projects. Again, everyone, at the beginning of this episode, that short film was Trey's film Normalcy. Make sure you go see the original, engage with the original here on YouTube, like it, leave some comments, and again, thank you so much for your candor and sharing your story with us. Again, it's so appreciated, so needed to have a more well-rounded, multifaceted understanding of autism and actually autistic people.
Thank you so much. I love having this chat.
My pleasure. I want to thank you guys once again for stopping by and spending a little bit of time with me today. As always, it is much appreciated. I hope you guys enjoyed the conversation today. Make sure you show my guest, Trey Wilson, some love. I'm leaving links for Trey's personal website as well as links to his other work. I definitely highly encourage you to check it out. As always, you can find me at deconstructing.neuro on TikTok and Instagram, and at tjamaicapogue on TikTok and Instagram. If you aren't already, make sure you subscribe to me on YouTube, and to join the patron exclusive soul tribe, you can always head over to patreon.com/tjamaicapogue. I love you guys. I thank you so much, and I hope you have a good one.